We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
Good evening, folks. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. It's 12 o'clock, Americans. Another day closer to victory. And for all of you out there on or behind the lines, this is your song.
Time, weather, and...
Highways!
Veteran of three foreign wars, entrepreneur, and warrior poet, Tony Arterburn takes on the issues facing our country, civilization, and planet. This is the Arterburn Radio Transmission.
"I hope to God," he said one day, "that I have fought my last battle. It is a bad thing to always be fighting. While in the thick of it, I am much too occupied to feel anything, but it is wretched just after. It is quite impossible to think of glory. Both mind and feeling are exhausted. I am wretched even at the moment of victory, and I always say that next to a battle lost, the greatest misery is a battle gained. Not only do you lose dear friends with whom you have been living, but you are forced to leave the wounded behind you. To be sure, one tries to do the best for them, but how little that is. At such moments, every feeling in your breast is dreaded. I am now just beginning to retain my natural spirits, and I never wish for any more fighting. It had been a damn nice thing, the nearest run thing you ever saw in your life." That's the Duke of Wellington after the Battle of Waterloo to defeat and turn back Napoleon. There's a couple of really important historical caveats to that, some bends in the river of time. You know, Napoleon was not supposed to lose that battle. And of course, you have that famous quote from the Duke of Wellington. It was a near run thing, the nearest run thing you ever saw. So thin margin on victory. And of course, that was when the Rothschilds, they had their intelligence agents around that battle, knowing what had happened. And when Napoleon was defeated, they sent their emissaries. They got word to travel as fast as they possibly could to get back to the markets in London. And the representative, the Rothschilds, slowly started to sell everything off, like, you know, and basically showing and signaling that Wellington had lost the battle, but he'd actually won. And when everybody else panic sold, the Rothschilds bought everything up. You know, not that they needed to buy much more, but that was when they had absolute control, right? The bankster class really solidified its control after that. And all this goes together, you know, war, geopolitics, foreign policy, monetary policy, economic, sociological, spiritual, all this flows together. And we have to decipher, you know, what it all means. So I thought I'd start out the program reading a little bit of history. That's the mood I'm in today. It's hard to look at these headlines and want to talk about any of this stuff. The election. Oh my, we'll go into a little bit maybe today on some of the election stuff. But welcome to the Arterburn Radio Transmission, ladies and gentlemen. I am Tony Arterburn. I'm your host, broadcasting in defiance of globalist goblins, the neocons, the New World Order, the Build Back Better, Biden, Beelzebub, Baphomet, Bilderberg, Bohemian Grove, Bankster Bunch. It is the 21st of March, 2024. Just got done with the David Knight Show. We're broadcasting live on freeworld.fm, as well as the America Unplugged channel over on Rockfin and my Twitter or X or whatever it is being called. It's at Tony Arterburn. 9:30 a.m. The Answer, San Antonio. Appreciate everybody tuning in. It reminds me, I looked at the date and I was like, it reminded me of Groundhog Day when he's being sarcastic and somebody says, are you predicting an early spring? And he says, actually, I'm predicting March 21st. And then the guy thinks about it for a second. He goes, I think that is the first day of spring. It's technically, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, at least on the calendar. But I think we are finally, even though it was a little cold a couple of days ago here in the Ozarks, but I think we're finally headed into spring. And of course, the thickening of the election and all the politics and garbage surrounding that, the mind games, the psychological warfare. They had the meeting, the Federal Open Market Committee meeting, the FOMC, and not telling us anything we didn't know. You know, by the way, this is Parapolitics and Precious Metals. I pick stories for you guys, but the wheelhouse always goes back into metals, always goes back into markets. I don't know. That's just where, you know, I have a hammer, so every problem's a nail. But I think we can agree that a lot of our problems, whether it's fake politicians, fake wars, fake economies, fake companies, fake news, it all tracks back to fake money. So we start from there. But they had this meeting, and we'll get into a little bit of that today. They didn't raise interest rates, and nobody really thought that, or lower interest rates. Nobody really thought that they would. But they're signaling they're going to, even though they've licked inflation and all this. It's just nonsense, folks. Gold hit its all-time high, which really is not true because the dollar's hitting its all-time low. So much to glean from the headlines. But this is something I pulled up. Let's look at Drudge. I always do this. I know that I do. But I'm telling you to look at Drudge because this is what Operation Mockingbird wants you to talk about. It wants you to look at their headlines. And of course, it has Tim Cook. He's curating. Look, he's thinking. He's curating. That's what he likes to do with pie. He likes to curate your experience over on Apple. But the DOJ is suing Apple over iPhone monopoly, blah, blah. Not that that'll ever go anywhere. This is all window dressing. But if you the previous headline and what I looked at early this morning was over here in the left hand column, and they've changed the headline since, but it's World War III, watch U.S. troops on China border, Beijing ready to invade Taiwan by 2027. So let's go into that. Let's look at that. I want to talk about this. Why is this a headline? I mean, if you don't know the history, then it seems confusing. You know, if you don't know anything about geopolitics or U.S. foreign policy in the 20th century, if you're just a teleprompter reader that went to one of the Ivy League schools and you got your certificate and you're in the club, then you didn't have to read all this and actually absorb the history and know who the players were and see how things changed from the 1960s and the 1970s and how we set the stage for today. Let's talk about this. Let's see if I have a link already pulled. Yeah, this is one of the links I had pulled up. So let me pull up this other screen, and we're going to look at this story that is over on MSN about China. Because I think with the TikTok ban and all the language and the rhetoric about China entering our politics, you need to understand, you need to take a step back and not be absorbed into the left-right paradigm using China as a boogeyman. By the way, China's a bad actor. We know this because of who founded it, right? Who founded the modern-day China? It wasn't Mao Zedong. I mean, he helped, but he was just a stooge of large capital. It's the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, 1949. They set up Mao's China under communism. Let's not forget that, right? And let's look at this headline. China on track to be ready to invade Taiwan by 2027, U.S. says. China is building its military and nuclear arsenal on a scale not seen since World War II, and all signs suggest it is sticking to ambitions to be ready to invade Taiwan by 2027. Despite Beijing's economic challenges, its official defense budget has increased by 16% over recent years to more than $233 billion. Oh, wow, that's just huge. Folks, we spend more, the U.S. budget on defense is more than I think the next seven countries combined. That's including China, like not even close. But let's go into this, okay? These headlines are going to continue to get thrown around, and you need to be aware that the history and everything that this country has done, I'm talking about the United States of America and its policy towards China, has been to accept this fact. Now, the game is changing, and this is the big question. Why the game change? You did this. You accepted this. Let's go back. Okay, let's go back to the 1960s. China was completely isolated. Mao Zedong got nuclear weapons in 1964. Okay, this was nuclear proliferation. It was absolutely a thorn in the side of the Johnson administration. They didn't do anything about it. They couldn't. This was this massive, landmass with almost a billion people. And again, at the time, and they had nuclear weapons, part of what was thought of as the communist monolithic bloc. But that wasn't true. China's its own country. They were having shootouts and border disputes with the Soviet Union. Most people don't know that. Again, teleprompter readers don't know this. Soviet troops and Chinese, the Sino-Soviet conflict, this was happening in the 1960s in real time. Like, they were having disputes over some of the lands that were seized by the Tsar in the 19th century. In the 18th, 19th century, the Tsarist Russia was very powerful, more powerful than China. And it was Napoleon that China's a sleeping dragon and you should let it slumber. Well, anyway, it's been woken up by the elites, but go back to the 1960s. They got nuclear weapons in 1964, completely isolated. And then Nixon comes along, gets elected in 68. He brings in Henry Kissinger, who was worked for the Rockefellers and, of course, was a professor at Harvard, wrote a book. Literally, this guy, the oldest fat man in history, he wrote a book on how to successfully carry out, kind of like an instruction manual, how to use limited nuclear weapons, like just in limited warfare, because you can limit a nuclear war. He wrote this book. And you got to think, that's the height of psychopathy, isn't it? But he writes a book on limited nuclear warfare. Nixon brings him in. And this is part of Nixon's triangular diplomacy. I know a lot about this history because I actually studied the past, and I wasn't handed a diploma. I don't walk between the raindrops. I don't read the news from a teleprompter. And they decided they were going to open China. And this was a way to put a wedge between the West and the Soviet Union, if they could wrest China away, if it wouldn't be a monolithic bloc. It's pretty weird because at the same time, we're fighting a war in Vietnam because we didn't want the domino theory to happen. But again, two things are happening at the same time. One, we feel like we can wrest China away from the Soviet monolithic communist bloc, or so we thought. And if we can do that, but if we don't intervene in Vietnam, it'll have a domino effect. All this was nonsense. So we opened China in 72. Major earthquake, major geopolitical upheaval. The United States was able to score this. Again, it's a coup that we set up. And we wrested China away from the Soviet bloc and Soviet influence. They're already having problems. But one of the things that Nixon and Mao discussed along with Kissinger, this was a verbal promise that we recognized a one-China policy. Now, this is people like Pat Buchanan were there, who was a staunch Cold Warrior, right winger, my kind of guy. So love Pat. And Pat's been I wish I had opportunity to meet him. Maybe I will someday, but he doesn't do interviews anymore. But he's been a great teacher to me. And he disagreed with what Nixon was doing, because he was somebody who, you go back to the 1950s, during the height of the Korean War, what was the cry from Douglas MacArthur? MacArthur had been called out from the Viceroy of Japan to fight the war because the North Koreans had overwhelmed the 38th parallel and were going to take over the Korean Peninsula. And the call was, we're going to release Chiang. What's that mean? Well, they're going to release Chiang Kai-shek, who had run China, you know, had been the leader of China or whatever the title was, but he'd run China. And after the 1949 revolution, funded by the world's richest people, I mean, communism's not organic, folks. Marxism's not organic. It has to have funding. It has to, like, this doesn't happen in a vacuum. And I know a lot of the court historians want to paper over this. It just happens, and, you know, it doesn't. So you have Rockefeller's Rothschild setting up Mao's China in 1949, being their backers, and Chiang Kai-shek flees to Formosa, which is Taiwan, okay? So this was a Cold War key piece that we had at the height of tensions, was to have Taiwan, which is Formosa, with Chiang Kai-shek and all the rest. That was taken off the table in 1972. I'm just giving you some history here because the teleprompter readers can't. They don't know it, okay? This is not going to be discussed on Fox because, again, the question isn't, you know, is China going to have, is there going to be a one China policy? We already agreed to it. Nixon and Kissinger agreed to it. They started sharing communiques. They started sharing intelligence. It was, and we abandoned, at least in theory, we abandoned Taiwan. I'm not saying it's right, but that's what happened in 1972. It's 52 years ago. We abandoned it verbally. Okay. And it was just a key piece. It was kind of like, we're letting you know we agree with the one China policy. One China policy is the absorption of Formosa, which is Taiwan. Now, here's something else, then you can go look it up. January 1st, 1979, Zygmunt Brzezinski, National Security Advisor for Jimmy Carter, you know, the head technocrat, his daughter, Mika, is on Morning Joe. Don't hit your head on the on the desk, Mika. But he's on Morning Joe. And again, this family, they, again, technocracy ties, setting up the future, right, between two ages. You look at the memo that he writes, January 1st, 1979. This is an official memorandum by the United States government that, again, puts in writing what Nixon and Kissinger had verbally promised Mao. Mao long since dead in 1979. So why are we doing that? It's reaffirming our stance going into further Cold War tensions, setting the chessboard, the grand chessboard for the geopolitical policy of the United States in the 1980s. This was to affirm that we recognized a one China policy in writing. This is a document from the White House. So I ask you, what does all this mean when we see war clouds and we see all the rhetoric coming out about China, when we literally gave them the green light? We gave them our industrial base. Could it be that our overlords are setting us up for, are they farming us? Is that what this is? This seems completely intentional to me. Does it seem like that to you? See, I smell a rat. See, I don't think China's a good actor, right? I understand. I mean, it spies on us, it buys our politicians, but how is it able to do that? You know, Eric Swalwell has a Chinese girlfriend, or did. Dianne Feinstein's driver was a Chinese spy for 20 years. The Clintons had, you know, bags of cash, Chinese missile technology. Well, we give technology to the Israelis. The Israelis sell it to the Chinese. We give it to them. December 11th, 2001, 90 days after 9/11, to the day, George W. Bush signs over most favored trading status to the Chinese, to the communist Chinese. Now, why is that? We lost 55,000 factories right after that. 1 in 3 manufacturing jobs disappeared. the opening of the 20th century, the 21st century, we were supposed to have another American century, but our leaders, in quotations, our rulers decided to move it eastward. What's China telling their people that we aren't? China's the largest producer of gold, has 60,000 gold mines. Matter of fact, gold beans, literally beans, my dog isn't here today, unfortunately. She's at the farm getting some sunshine and running security for me at the cabin. But they're buying gold beans, literally, like little beans, full of, because they're preparing for a monetary reset. Now, we're talking about nonsense, you know, here in this country. Stuff that's already happened or we really can't do anything about. The corrupt duopoly of the two-party system. And frankly, it's hard for me to even cover it anymore. It's so stupid. But that's what we're not talking about, real consequential matter. You can't get a real issue into the debates. Not really. You can get periphery just enough to satiate the appetites of people that are more awake than others, right? But nothing real. But the Chinese, they're not exporting, they're importing, and they're resetting their monetary system along with the BRICS nations. So that's going on. But you see these headlines and the TikTok thing. This all, I've been watching this for quite a while. I even talked to Gerald Celente about it 4 years ago when I was on hosting for David Knight on InfoWars, about how they're just setting the stage for this, like this conflict. But it's, the calls are coming from inside the house. Like, how, we literally gave them everything. And is it like Joel Skousen has been saying, that we build them up so we could fight them, or that they, we can have an excuse to have this, you know, opponent? These are open questions. That's where, in my opinion, if you want to come to me for analysis, and as I hope that's what you do, this is where I think about all the time. So I have questions. Because it doesn't make any sense. I'm not just going to get lockstep like a good soldier and, you know, follow orders. That's very dangerous. So be skeptical of these headlines. And it doesn't mean that I'm backing China. And it doesn't mean that I'm backing Russia or anything like that when I bring up, you know, the history of NATO or anything like that. It's just it's a question that you should ask yourself, especially when these headlines flash across major news outlets. They did not know the history, that we're completely reversing course of what we already promised and what we already have done, and that we just completely handed the keys over to them, and then they're the aggressor. You know, I haven't seen, you know, China's an aggressor. I'm sure it will be. As the United States begins to weaken and wane from our own self-inflicted wounds, there will be a one, and on a long enough timeline, mark my words, that will happen. Will it be an excuse for us to have a kinetic conflict to save the dollar? You see, they need war. They need war to prop up a failing system. The failing system is the dominating hegemonic power of the American empire. I'm not talking about the American Republic, land that I love. I'm not talking about our country. I'm talking about this extension, this monstrosity of it, which is the American empire, the 700 bases in 132 countries. Something that, you know, they used to read George Washington's farewell address in Congress every year up until the 1930s, talking about no entangling alliances. You know, our founding father was a wise man. He was not a warmonger. He was not hungry for power. He was not a politician. As a matter of fact, he hated the job. He didn't want a second term. He thought it was beneath him. It was, because most of that job and any of the jobs in politics are garbage. He wanted to go home and run his farm and his businesses. Totally understand that when you deal with people that are political, it's like a preview of hell's waiting room. It's just the worst people. I've been told I wasn't political when I was in politics. You're just not political. I got called not political by a particular person who I think is going to get his comeuppance in this election cycle. So It's I got Schadenfreude from the Germans. The Germans, only the Germans have the word that no one else, no other culture has, Schadenfreude, which is like it's like joy in watching other watching your opponents lose or something, you know, in watching people have a setback. It was pretty arrogant because I'm an idealist. You know, I believe in the cause. I'm a true believer, you know, like I run for office, I'm going to bankrupt myself. I go all in. And, you know, it's a crushing thing when you're an extremist like that. It's the way you are with everything. I'm not political. I don't think that. I don't think Machiavellian. It's not really how I think. I'm more of a, you know, I'm tactical, but I'm not political. You know what that is? That's a completely new thing. In the realm of human behavior, it's become grotesque, hasn't it? So we've got these people set us up for what this trajectory we're on now. And so just be skeptical, look at the headlines, understand the history. Something is afoot here. And the only way they can save it is by taking you to war. That's it. I mean, everything else is, you got to stop writing those checks. So the question is, when is that going to be? You know, how much of your mind is going to be captured in that psychological war? How much of your spirit is going to be captured in that? Remember the, we got to fight them over there, so we have to fight them over here. Remember that? What about evildoers? What happened to that caliphate? That, remember they were going to have a worldwide caliphate and take us all over? I remember Glenn Beck. I'll never forget. I was eating a sandwich on my lunch break. I owned a convenience store, and I was 26 years old. I never forget statements like this. My memory goes on. Okay, some things I don't remember. Thank God Almighty. Thanks. Thankfully, I've forgotten things, but I remember statements like this. And you know, there was supposed to be this. You know, Iran was going to take over. Like, we had this, going to build this. I don't know how they thought they were going to do it, but they're going to have Shia and Sunni, these alliances, and they're going to create a caliphate, and we were standing up against it. And he said that this is Glenn Beck, said that Rick Santorum was the Winston Churchill of our time. Remember Rick?
Yeah.
Senator Rick Santorum, he was the Winston Churchill of our time. That's what I remember, statements like that. They stick in me. They stick in my mind. Every once in a while, they'll come to the surface. Because now we're in 2024. So you have the benefit of looking backwards, and you go, wait, all this stuff didn't happen. So be mindful of commentators, be mindful of people, the politicos with ulterior motives, you know, the Fox, they would get really animated about war. That's why I read that quote from Wellington. This is it's a nasty thing that you have to do sometimes. You get these cheerleaders and people that just dismiss the human cost of all this. I mean, it blows back on us. The actions of the people at the top. I mean, first of all, the leadership of the United States doesn't even believe in the country. They don't even believe in nation states. These are internationalist Rhodes scholars, as in Cecil Rhodes, the alcoholic pederast and Rothschild's agent. I mean, come on. That's what Rhodes scholarship is. Cecil Rhodes, you know, this was the secret societies and the round table and all that's going back to the beginning of the 20th century. I know I'm not supposed to remember that far back, but, you know, it's the embryonic stage of the Council on Foreign Relations. You have to be CFR to be anything in this country if you're going to be at the top. Hillary Clinton said she went to the CFR to learn what they're supposed to think next. Then you have the Trilateral Commission. I just mentioned Zbigniew Brzezinski. All these are supranational entities that give direction and policy to our country. And we just accept it. But we got the two parties. See, you know, I can vote. How are the Republicans, how are they selling anything anymore? Like, you literally have had every opportunity to turn things around. They don't like power, by the way. Republicans hate power. Power, you don't raise as much money, I guess. It's like being a constant opposition and just raising money. It's the grift that keeps on giving. Or as I like to call the GOP, grifters on patrol. They just stack up those donations and not do anything. How are they going to sell us on 2024? What are you selling me? You just pass. The best you can do is the TikTok ban. And that's not helping me, right? That's a Trojan horse for censorship. This is what you're thinking. We can't get a consensus on the border. We can't get a consensus on our fiscal and monetary policy that's out of control. It's like we're adding $1 trillion in debt every 90 days, ladies and gentlemen. This is an alarm bell in the night. All right. These are unsustainable things that will, you can't turn away from it. It's too massive. It's not going to have a happy ending. I mean, think about that. Think about the economic consequences of a country that it took it from our founding to the time I was born. I'm 44. So from the founding to the time into 1979, it took us that long to go $1 trillion in debt. Now we do it every 90 days. The wheels are off. Be skeptical. Don't get behind the what did Harry Truman say when and when I'm getting applauded, I know I'm in the wrong pew. Like if you just got to step back from the crowd, step back from the herd, look at this skeptically. And it doesn't mean that, you know, doesn't mean everything's a false flag, but I am, when these little headlines filter down, I have a defense mechanism. I want to stand up and talk to you about some of the history, but don't believe me. Go and do the research for yourself and think for yourself. That's key. All right. Let's take a look at the Rockfin chat. By the way, always broadcasting on rockfin.com on the America Unplugged channel. Love to see everybody over there. Jason Barker says, morning, Tony. Ann Christ is here. Thank you, Ann. Always good to see you. Max B. Want to thank Jason Barker for helping us with freeworld.fm. Hopefully I'm coming through loud and clear over on Free World. Yeah, Lenny and the Squig Tones. Yes, I've always been curious that they say we owe China $22 trillion and China owes over $220 trillion in debt. So who do they owe their debt to? The aliens. Yeah, this is the funny part. Like you always hear about, you know, the Chinese, they bought U.S. treasuries, and China's not doing good economically, by the way. They have a massive real estate bubble. They have a currency crunch. But they've taken some things out of our old playbook. You know, we used to be economic nationalists. They have massive tariffs, like 50%, 60% tariffs to get into the Chinese markets. They hoard gold and commodities. It's got the Belt and Road Initiative. We don't have anything like that. We have the bomb you until you vote for Rainbow Flag Initiative, which is not working out well for us. Where does it make us a world? We'll cut off all of your funds and steal money from you and freeze your accounts if you don't do the rainbow flag. Yeah, Lenny says, I don't think Taiwan is going to go down like the whole Hong Kong thing. No, it's not. It's going to be an excuse. So we got to stay frosty. Jason Barker says Free World is clear, loud and clear. Okay, good. Well, that's good to know. We're working on Free World. There's a lot to go over when you're building a network, and we got some great volunteers and people, and thanks everybody for keeping it alive, because I've got more hosts coming on and some more talent. And it's a labor of love. We only have so many hours in a day. My entrepreneurial brain, like I always see things, I'm like, I could do that. I can do this, is how it works, right? And then you realize, oh, you know, there's a clock and it's ticking and you've only got so much time and you can't finish the things you already started. It's the entrepreneur's lament, I think. All right. Thanks everybody for joining. I see if anybody's in the Free World chat. I see it's active right now. I probably need to reanimate it, but thanks everybody over on Free World too. Okay, let's jump around a little bit on the headlines. As I said, my wheelhouse always takes me to gold and silver. It takes me to cryptocurrency. What a crazy time. First of all, you know, I was talking to to David Knight this morning on his show. And as I'm thinking, I just literally just thought this as I was, you know, laying out gold hitting its all time high. It hit $2,225 per troy ounce for the yellow metal a couple days ago. And we just, it's like nothing now. Like, it's like, oh yeah, it's another ATH, another all time high. And I'm like, we don't need to think of it that way. Gold is not hitting its all time high. The dollar is hitting its all time low. Right. And this is the issue, right? And the more that, and Jerome Powell, and they didn't even move the interest rates. They're just saying they're going to, and they got three rate cuts this year. That'll goose the economy and it'll be happy days are here again. And there'll be all these booms in the stock market and all this stuff. You need to be so skeptical of that. You're talking about everything's built on fake. Everything's built on fiat. So the companies that are supposedly profitable and there's environmental social governance and all this stuff, you know, am I buying some stocks right now? Absolutely. You know, I'm buying some stocks and I'm buying some mining stocks. I buy a little bit every single day. If you guys will bear with me, I have to text my crew to let them know that the key, I left the key out for them so they can get inside. Because the shop's going to open here in a second. And I have a great crew. They come in early. Let me text her real quick. So gold is hitting its all-time high, right? But the issue is that the dollar is going down. Let's go to look at this headline on Kitco. And I think this is really summing up how I've been feeling lately. It's just putting, I like direct language, you know, and when you look at people saying, well, what about rate cuts and where does that end up? Like the Bank of Japan's about to have to start raising. They've had zero rates. And there's even such a thing as negative rates, if you can wrap your brain around that, like charging you for keeping your money in the account because they need it in the money supply. This is Kitco.news. It doesn't matter when the Fed cuts rates. They're going to zero and gold is going higher. This is from Monetary Metals, Keith Weiner. Says, while the Federal Reserve's monetary policy stance will continue to dominate short-term gold price volatility, one market strategist said that there are much bigger long-term patterns investors need to pay attention to. This is an interview with Kitco News. Keith Warner, CEO of Monetary Metals, said that regardless of when the U.S. Central Bank begins its easing cycle, when it starts, interest rates are headed back to zero, which will be positive for gold. He explained the biggest issue for the economy is that interest rates are currency higher than the return on capital. Well, see, this is the issue. And this is what, you know, when they go to cut rates, and this is going to be very soon, you need to pay attention because it's going to have this short-term sugar high effect. It's going to go through, it's going to permeate every aspect of our economy, our political life. Because they're going to try to prop up the current regime. This is what they're going to do. All right, so let's actually play some 4D chess. Let's look into 2025 for a second. If we know we got three rate cuts this year, inflation hasn't been taken into consideration. Not really. They can't do much else. They raised rates faster than any time in history, trying to curtail the damage that they've done. They've shrunk the money supply, but the problem is it's baked into the system now. The real true cost of inflation is in your food. It's in the things that you buy every day. There is some price stabilization on stuff that you don't need, right? Whether it's high priced watches or electronics or things like that, or even phones, right? People aren't buying those as much because they can't afford them, but they have to buy food. They have to eat, right? And so you find it in housing, but all the things, rent, right? This is where you're going to see the true cost of inflation. So they're going to cut rates. You're going to have these side-by-side things happening at the same time. You're going to have rate cuts and you're going to have inflation spiking, but the economy is going to seem to be doing okay. We're going to go into the election and then all that chaos, all that stuff, right? We have remnants of the lockdown election, all the stuff that happened in 2020. We'll have a bunch of repeats of all that. But let me ask you a question. Are the biggest crash in history, Who do the elites, right? When you're looking at the election, the grand chessboard, I'm talking politics now. Who do the elites want to dump that in the lap of? I mean, if you're a donor, right? If you're one of the mega donors, if you're one of the string pullers, if you're one of the bankster class, if you're one of those people behind the scenes, let me ask you a question. Who and what movement do you want holding the bag when you have to raise rates to save what's left of the dollar? Because, you know, when you do that, when you strengthen the dollar, a lot of these big chunk of the economy is going to have to be, well, it's going to have to be creatively destroyed. Think about that. Who's going to hold the bag? And see, I'm looking at 2024. I'm seeing the lead up to this election. And I'm thinking, well, it looks like MAGA has the best chance. It looks like the what should have been the America First movement is going to be left holding the bag. Because the Fed's going to turn on whoever that, again, they don't have the same, they may prop up the economy. It may look like the ruling regime's going to do well, but somebody has to pay the piper, and that's coming. So do some of your own forward thinking on that. When you think about your finances or your well-being or where you're going to be a year from now, there was a great book that Pat Buchanan wrote about the United States. And I remember I was 31, and I was a huge fan of The Death of the West. And he wrote a book, and this was a time that I was deciding, you know, I was going to get, you know, into radio and start, you know, dipping my toe into politics. Well, I didn't dip. I just dove headlong in, right? But I started looking into running for office and all that. And I bought a book by Pat Buchanan who came out just before 2012. And it was called Suicide of a Superpower. Will America Survive to 2025? Because he'd done the projections. And you're talking about things we talked about earlier in the show, which was the loss of our ability to manufacture, which was taken from us. We didn't lose it. We didn't wake up one day and, oh, it's gone. It was just, you know, it was given away, and mostly to places like China. But the multinationals moved around to, that way they can skirt, you know, having to pay American workers a decent wage and having to, you know, combat, you know, environmental regulation or any, you know, kind of decency stuff. We don't have to do that. We just move around because we let it happen. Ross Perot called it a giant sucking sound. We set all that up. We set up all the abilities for, you know, to lose our purchasing power of the dollar, right? Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971. So we've been free-floating for 50 plus years. The average lifespan of a fiat currency is 26 years. The United States and the dollar is now the world's oldest living fiat currency in the world. I mean, it's not the one that's oldest that ever lived, but it's pretty close. The average is 26 years. So we're going to have all of these things culminating at one time. And we're going into this election cycle, which, you know, I can cover for you if you'd like. I still cover some politics, but not the way I used to. I'm more looking at what are the future scenarios that they're going to run when it's talking about going into 2025, which is what I'm concerned with. This is going to be a bunch of sideshows and psyops, but when they really start turning the screws, it's going to be 2025. And all these prices, and I think the things that are built into it now, are almost irrelevant. Because it's like I said, gold's not necessarily going up, although demand is up and the central banks are buying. I'm not telling you that gold's going to be in 3,000 and 4,000 and 5,000, although that wouldn't surprise me. If I woke up tomorrow and gold was $3,000 an ounce, I wouldn't blink an eye. I wouldn't think twice about it. Seemed relevant in the situation where you have a currency that's been debauched. You know, that's what Vladimir Lenin said. You want to destroy a country, you first debauch its currency. Well, the commie got it right, right? That's they knew that. They were students of Karl Marx. And in the Communist Manifesto, what's the fifth plank, I believe, is a central bank. He noted, this is in the back to the Kitco article, he noted that the impact higher interest rates have had on commercial real estate, as the sector has lost trillions of dollars in value in the last few years. It's just an appetizer, and what he sees is a 10-course meal. He explained that there will have to be mass liquidations across all sectors of the economy as businesses adjust to higher rates of capital. The Federal Reserve will have to reverse interest rates and put them back to where interest rates are not so far above the return on capital, and that's basically zero. Yeah, there's consequence. All that commercial real estate sector, and Gerald Celente has been talking about this for years. We're just at the beginning. I mean, David Knight's talked about this. There's massive shifts going on, whether you're in New York City where the Canadian pension fund just sold one of its high rises for a dollar for debt assumption, or the Four Seasons out in San Francisco. These are the rumblings of the loss of the government programs to prop up the rent for all these people that went and worked from home during the scamdemic. Massive loss of wealth across the board. Now, who does that hurt first, by the way? It hurts the smaller and regional size banks. Smaller and regional banks. And that's the issue going into this run up to the election. I think it's going to buy you a little bit of time because they're going to lower the rates, but you need to be thinking about 25. You need to be thinking about what's on the horizon after the, all this is a, they're just setting the table, but it's not going to, we're not returning to 2019 because we're in a fourth turning. All right. We're not returning. We're fourth turning. So keep your eyes open, and I'll continue to go into these rabbit holes are fun. You know, going into metals, going into, look at what's happening with Bitcoin. When I started out in Bitcoin and buying in 2016 for some of the first ATMs, I had no idea what to expect. You know, we had talked about where's the number going to go? You know, that's funny in crypto. It's always number go up. And of course, Bitcoin selling, and I think spot price. Let me see if I can pull up price. But it was over 66,000. Let me see if I can get Bitcoin price up here. And we'll do gold and silver prices too. There's something happening all across the world. These massive reallocations of funds going into Bitcoin and these ETFs. Now, I'm not a fan of the ETFs. I think that it's the improper way to own crypto because you can't really own it. But there's something happening with these companies like BlackRock. And again, it's an open question. You know, what's their intent? But where are you going to park any capital in a market where everything's fake and it's propped up by fake? You know, people are looking for finite, and finite is the real. It's authentic. So I think there's a natural path for things like Bitcoin, which is really unique unto itself. I do like the overall crypto market, but there is something interesting to watch with Bitcoin. You got Bitcoin at $66,515. Luciferian banks or notes make one Bitcoin, and it's hit 72 in the last couple of weeks. I think it's been a sell-off. It hit its all-time high, you know, and then there's some sell-off, there's some pullback, but this is a trend. And I'm still bullish on all this because there's so much happening with these reallocations of funds. They pulled so much liquidity out of the spot gold markets for GLD on the Spider. But the same thing, gold didn't go down. They're like correlating together because I think there's an underlying understanding that the dollar and how what we know is the world's financial framework is being reset. This is something to pay attention to, absolutely. In the face of that, and let's do the last article for today. In the face of that, we're having the preview of what's next for this country, what's next for all of us, if we're not building parallel systems, is censorship. This is Natural News. Canada is rolling out social credit system. And this is citizens' bank accounts linked to obedience scores. This is from Ethan Hupp over on Natural News. Our neighbors to the north are implementing a new system called open banking that will link citizens' bank accounts to a new social credit scoring system. In the aftermath of the trucker convoy and the other noteworthy protest against the pandemic and tyranny in Canada, the Justin Trudeau regime is radicalizing the nation's banking system to make it much harder for citizens to express their voices against political corruption. Proponents of the social credit score linked banking paradigm say it will make Canadian banks more, quote, inclusive. I love these. The news speak. The news speak. You know, Orwell, that guy, you know, he was onto something. It's allowing them to easily access user data on demand while being able to share information with one another. A World Bank partner called Open Banking Excellence, OBE, which originated in the United Kingdom, is proudly boasting right now that it will incorporate social credit scores with people's banking information in Canada. Canadians will likely receive digital cash and identification in convenient, all-in-one, inclusive place. Can I say that I don't want to be in anything inclusive? I like merit-based systems. You know, if you want to work 80 hours, 90 hours a week and build a business, you'd be rewarded for that. If you don't want to work that much, fine. You make less. Can we all just kind of go to that? I mean, is that okay? If I don't want to be a part of your Orwellian dystopic nightmare, can I opt out for another bank that doesn't do that? Or maybe I don't even participate in your evil Luciferian bankster system in the first place. See, that's why it's important. Not necessarily our book, Munster Fuller, this was so important. You know, the futurist, he wrote Grunch of Giants, which meant gross universal cash ice. He was a genius who figured out, hey, these people that control our cash, they're robbing us, right? But he said something very important is don't fight the old system, the dying system. You're making it more powerful. You build something else. You go and start working on building something else. That's what we need to do. And I think they're innovators, and that's what you always learn in history. Is that you go look at the fall of the Soviet Union, and it lasted the length of the lifespan of somebody, right? It's from 1917, you know, the Red October, up until 1990, 1991, and then it broke into 16 pieces. So in that span of time, right, it was able to try this experiment where you can put a boot on the human spirit and creativity and try to put people in classes. This was like trying, you know, Plato talked about this in the Republic and having the myth of the metals, and that, you know, the state would be the parent and everybody would be given their own, like, this is your lot in life. And the state gives that to you, but that's not how God created us. We're all created in God's image, right? We're supposed to create, whether that's even if it's a farmer to create, you know, your own crop or a mother to create a family, you're doing something. And it's to fulfill your own destiny. Everybody has one. So you're going against God's plan. You can get rid of God in theory. Like, you know, there is no God in the state. What's that joke that Reagan told about the commissar coming out to inspect the potato farm? And the commissar goes out to the potato farm in the Soviet Union. And he asked the potato farmer, he says, okay, so what's our crop yield? It's this excellent commissar. He's like, you're going to tell me how many potatoes we're going to yield this year? And the farmer's scared to death. You know, he says, it's going to be a lot. He goes, can you give me a figure? He goes, we're going to have so many potatoes, commissar, it's going to reach to heaven and God. And the commissar said, this is the Soviet Union. There is no God. And he said, oh, thank goodness. There are no potatoes either. Right. That's communism 101. All right, folks. Well, I always have fun talking to all of you. Be sure and subscribe to the podcast. Anywhere podcasts are served, Arterburn Radio Transmission. We've got a new Paratruther coming out soon on Moon Mysteries. I've got the two researchers, Chris Graves, Mr. Anderson will be back. We're going to do a show this weekend on just all kinds of, if you like discussions on stuff like that, check out Paratruther. It's on this channel as well. America Unplugged on Saturdays. Tune into that, 11 a.m. Central Time. Myself, the legendary Don Jeffries, the great Billy Ray Valentine for America Unplugged. I'll be announcing soon, very soon, what I'm going to do with the Wise Wolf Golden Crypto Show, trying to make a put that in concrete where I'm going to be, when I can record, but also subscribe to that channel as well. There's some great stuff being loaded up over there on the Wise Wolf Golden Crypto Show. But I appreciate each and every one of you. It means a lot. We've got whole major announcements too. Maybe next week we'll talk about it. I got a big announcement that's going to happen real soon with Wise Wolf. But check out wolfpack.gold. Membership programs starting as low as $50 a month for precious metals. And the more people that join, the better deals we get for everybody. So we're building the pack right now. Promo code 1776. Over there on wolfpack.gold. IRA rollovers, 401ks, large or small, we handle them all. All right. So come see us. Take care of each other. Have a great weekend. End of transmission.